think I had it once, but I drowned it in gravy anyway.
Oh, sorry. I put my phone on silent. That was my phone.
So that was the Grainchill theme tune.
Yeah, that's what happens when I get a notification from BBC News.
So you got that. So the Grainchill theme tune played when the Queen died.
Yeah, it was the best moment of my life.
You're saying the Queen died because she was hit with a flying sausage on a fork. Is that what happened?
Yeah, she's buried next to Danny Kendall though. So.
Did Danny Kendall drown in a swimmer?
No, he didn't drown. I think, didn't he? He was found dead in Mr. Bronson's car.
Did Bronson do it then?
What? Jesus, can you imagine the paperwork Mr. Bronson must have had to fill out after that?
Bloody hell. I didn't think I knew that.
I know where you're getting the swimming pool connection from. He was designing the swimming pool, wasn't he? He was... Danny Kendall was designing the artwork for the tiles in the swimming pool. Oh. And Mr. Bronson was giving him hell for it. And then he wound up dead in Mr. Bronson's car.
Oh my goodness. That's awful.
I can't remember what I did yesterday. But I remember that vividly.
You don't get Grainchill content on the dub, that's all I'm saying.
I don't imagine Ben Perkis watched children's TV as a child. He just seems far too serious.
That George Ellick would know what Danny Kendall got in his GCSEs.
Oh, yeah,
all the stats. Yeah. 6 A's, 2 B's, French not so strong.
Jerome would know who Mr. Bronson's going to pick on next.
Right, do we want to get on to the less kind of serious content?
Do you want to explain why you've got such a croaky voice?
I don't know if it's clear. I have got a bit of a croaky voice and I will occasionally have to clear my throat. This is genuinely, so we're recording this on Thursday evening. My throat is still genuinely a bit knackered from Tuesday night, from the 90th minute equaliser against Pompey. I was quite excited.
Yeah, I mean, the South Stand Upper erupted as well.
I was going to say, it was genuinely exciting though. It was for the first time in ages. We've scored late goals before, but I don't think, not since those games against Sheffield Wednesday and Portsmouth. Remember, there was like consecutive games where we scored in the last minute.
Both 3-2, weren't they?
Mm.
Yeah. Well, it was a kind of genuine kind of lose your shit moment, which was really nice.
The only other one I remember is Luke McNally's goal against Ipswich.
Which was around the same time, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was beautiful, made even more beautiful by what the Pompey fans were singing as the ball went in.
You can hear it in the build-up, can't you?
Yeah. Brilliant. Marvellous.
Why would you ever sing that song that close to the end of a game? it's just asking for trouble.
I think possibly because you're a little bit arrogant.
We'd never level that at Pompey.
I mean, they even had the bloody England brass band there on. I've never heard that before from them. I mean, I, as much as I feel like we could do with something of that nature to pump our supporters up a bit, I still don't think we should allow away fans in with all that gear, because you're just giving them an advantage straight away. It's just bizarre.
I genuinely reckon we should all go to Pompey in March, isn't it? We're playing away there. We should all go with a town crier's bell.
We should
all go and just start ringing it. And if they don't let us in, just stand outside ringing the bell all the way through the bloody game.
Okay. I'm going to go in.
I'm pretty sure that if I took in a piece of metal of the equivalent size and weight of that bell, it'd probably get taken off me. Just because it's bell-shaped doesn't make it more acceptable. In fact, it makes it less acceptable.
When he's getting searched going into the ground and they're kind of patting him down, they go, "What have you got in your pockets, mate?" Bell?
Yeah.
Not that pocket.
Yes. Not that bell.
And let's be honest, if you're the person on the gate who's kind of randomly choosing people to search before they go into a football ground, that's the bloke that you're choosing to search.
But we were talking about him on Tuesday. He's changed his name, hasn't he, to like Fratton Park, Harry Redknapp, Sol Campbell.
His name is John Portsmouth Football Club Westwood.
And he's an independent bookseller, is that right?
Yeah.
We were just imagining complaints over the phone.
Have you
got any modern history? Yep, Steve Claridge's autobiography.
God, this is getting on far too current.
Steve Claridge.
I like that was the most modern Pompey play you could think of.
Well, they signed Owen Moxon today, who's like a very, very rare example of a League One player who I know. The guy who came on and scored, he'd just signed from Wigan. I was likening it to, you know, the scene in the first Lord of the Rings film when they're digging out the orcs? And it was like Portsmouth just kind of, just one after the other. Like, and there's an even bigger one, and production line of brick shithouse kind of powerful-looking players. It's bizarre.
Yeah, sort of Mussino just kind of like put his hand up, clicked his fingers. And that's like another one, like, whoa!
Yeah, they brought on, like, cloned orc after orc, and then we brought out someone who's pretty much as old as Gandalf.
Right, are we going to do it? Are we going to do our topical content? Content.
I was a bit concerned that we, given recent results, that we're going to end up spending the next 6 weeks talking about match day activations and complaining about stuff and going through planning applications or lack of planning applications. So we sort of thought, why don't we take a bit of a diversion and look at creating a team of a decade. And I think we came to the conclusion we were going to look at the 2000s, which is a really odd decade if you look at it, because at the beginning of that decade, you've got Joey Beacham, you've got Paul Powell, you've got the sort of tail end of the 90s greats. And at the end of that decade, you've got James Constable, Ryan Clark, the promotion team from the conference. And in between is the most bizarre selection of players you can possibly imagine. So I don't know whether we're selecting a best of, like a Legends 11. My selections are players I think represent the decade in some way.
Yes, I've gone for something similar. I've gone for the kind of the middle ground, really, because I think I've not gone for any of the, none of your Beechams and your Moody's, because that wasn't their best decade. And also towards the end of it, I was kind of from about 2008, I was off having babies, so I wasn't really there very often. So I've kind of gone for the middle ground.
I'm saying it's very much the hard yards of the decade, that right in the middle.
Yeah. And the worst thing about that middle period of that decade is I can't remember where any of those players played. I mean, in most of them, I can't really remember them. I mean, I've gone for a kind of a mix of the kind of the best players, but I've also done a bit of a cop out, which is kind of my favourite. And I think that is slightly the ones that kind of represent parts of that period of time, maybe. Yeah, it was still quite a challenge. And I'm going to be honest with you, I was 3 minutes before we started recording, I was still changing my team. So.
Yeah. To me, there's three players on there that I think are nailed on. Only three. So I'd be interested to see if those three everybody has picked, because I think they're absolutely nailed on.
My disclaimer is that I was living away from 2006, 5, 6, up until, well, actually up until 2017. So my picks are kind of early decade or late decade and not much in between. So we might have a good spread because there are some of those late 90s legends that actually possibly still were the best players in their position across that entire decade.
Okay then, Rich, you can start then. Who's your goalkeeper?
Heart and head, I guess, says Ryan Clark, but I did kind of put Andy Woodman in brackets just because I did really like him, and I just really love the fact that he wrote a joint autobiography with Gareth Southgate called Woody and Nord.
Nobody ever calls him Nord, do they, though?
No.
Never hear that.
No, unless you're, Andy Woodman or family. So yeah, I've cheated a little bit, but I can't think of a better goalkeeper than either of those two, unless you guys have got another idea.
No, I went for Andy Woodman as well, for the reason that I said earlier, that Ryan Clark was kind of there when I wasn't really going much, and obviously saw him a lot more in the following decade, but I don't really have much of a memory of him from the 90s, but I think he was probably only there for like literally the end of 2009 anyway, wasn't he? So yeah. So yeah, I went for Woody as well.
He's now manager at Bromley. Like Bromley are about second or third in the National League, so he might actually take them up into the Football League, which I think is pretty cool, really.
Unless he fancies like stepping into assistant manager, you know.
As I say, I didn't necessarily go for the absolute best. I went for somebody who I thought was symbolic of the era, and I did go a little bit obscure. I threw in Andrea Guattelli. Now, he was one of the batch of players that Jim Smith brought in when Mary took over the club. It was a really bizarre period, bizarre because it was the end of the Kassam era, and Jim Smith came in, and it was the big return. I assume, without really looking at the players, just wiped out half the team. He brought in about six players. Andrea Guattelli made four appearances before Smith realised that Billy Turley was the better option.
I wondered when his name was going to get mentioned.
He was a strange character, wasn't he, with Billy Turley? Because, I mean, he wasn't great, was he? But I think he thought he was. any ideas that he might go into my team were completely diminished by the fact that he... Prior to the playoffs against Exeter, he said if we went to penalties, he was definitely taking a penalty. From that moment, I knew absolutely he was going to take a penalty and he was absolutely going to miss it. It was so obvious. And I don't understand why people who work in football don't understand football narratives enough to know that that's definitely what's going to happen.
Yeah, I do think, though, penalties are about confidence. And there is no player more confident than Billy Turley. And actually, not many goalies would have done that and then gone and saved the net penalty.
Did
he? I wasn't his biggest fan. I thought, fair play. Yeah, he missed that one and then he saved the next one.
Yeah, but he would have still saved the next one, probably, had he let somebody proper take the penalty.
You don't know that. He might have been, you know, a bit more pumped up after that.
Anyway, I chose Ryan Clark. Ryan Clark was a nice bloke as well, and there was some nice in that team and there was some nasty in that team, but Ryan Clark was just like a really honest and nice bloke. But also, and if nothing else, footballers who managed to find a way of writing themselves into the Oxford United history and the Oxford United kind of folklore, him dropping that cross into his own net at Wembley in the 2010 final, that made that game, that moment made that game the game it was, and it gave us that setup for the exciting end to it. And like, people will talk about him doing that for 20, 30, 40, 50 years when they talk about and reminisce about Oxford United history. So just that moment, if nothing else, it seems quite unfair actually to be the main thing that I remember about a really good goalkeeper is him spilling into the ball into the back of his own net at Wembley. But nevertheless, it turned out to be a wonderful moment. So yeah, for that, he's in for that reason for me.
And it looks like he's still playing. He's 41 and he's playing for, I mean, he played a few years at Bath City, but yeah, it looks like he's playing for Hungerford Town now.
Yeah, goalies go on forever though, don't they?
True.
Whilst he was at Bath City, I bumped into him at the BP garage at the Milton Interchange. It was nice. He was really happy. You kind of always assume that players, once they've dropped down to non-league, are like, oh yeah, no. But he was really excited about his football, which is really nice to hear. Mm. So good on him.
Right, so who are we taking then?
Well, Woodman's got two votes.
We're going to lock that in then. Okay, so Andy Woodman is our choice for a goalie of the 2000s. I assume everybody's gone for a back four.
Yeah, I have gone for a back four, even though, you know, we played three at the back for quite a while under Atkins.
We did indeed, yeah.
Atkins ball.
You say three at the back, that was comprehensively five,
oh,
at, the
five
back.
At the back. You know.
So go on then, go with yours then. You can start.
With my midfield, so I've gone for four. So I've got, so this is the one that I feel everybody should have put, and if they haven't, I will have less respect for you than Chris Wilder does for sandwich eating linesman. Andy Crosby nailed it. I mean, he's the captain as well, Andy Crosby. I made him captain alongside Andy Crosby. Now this kind of goes against what I said earlier about players from the 90s, but I think this is slightly different. So I've gone for Paul Wanless, because I think in the 90s he didn't really feature. He was just a kid, he was just a young slip of a man, and then he came back twice the man that he was. And I because he was a midfielder when we had him before, but he came back and played in central defence, and I thought he was immense when he played. I loved him. And then for my fullbacks, I've gone for, now I can't really remember anything about any left backs, apparently. So I've just gone for Matt Robinson because I remember him. And the only thing I remember about Matt Robinson is that when he ran out onto the pitch, he would always run through the sort of people lined up, like the kids lined up with the flags or whatever it was then. And that was obviously his pre-match thing, was he would run through them rather than out with the rest of the team.
When you say ran through them, you actually yeah, like palmed them all off rugby yeah. style. Or weaved through them like an obstacle course. Or just
ran through them.
Maybe that's the origins of, you know, when they put the little discs down on the pitch to get the players warmed up just after half time.
Yeah.
Maybe it all comes from the fact that he was weaving around the mascot. They went, you know what, he seems really ready when we kick off.
So. Can I just really go off on a wild tangent now? That little thing they do just before kickoff, they come out and then they do that. They call it the fast feet and they do the little jittery thing. There's absolutely no way that has any impact whatsoever on their condition for the game.
Unless you're taking a fancy penalty. That's the only time that is ever used. And then right back, I've gone for Scott McNiven.
Stakehead.
Again, I don't remember a huge amount about him, but that game at Shrewsbury where he went in goal was one of my favourite matches of that decade. Because Ian Atkins, for some reason, would refuse to have a goalie on the bench.
Yeah.
He would refuse to have a goalie on the bench. And then Woodman...
Somebody trod on his face. Yeah, somebody trod on his face. And he had a massive gash on the side of his face. And he had to go off for that reason.
Yeah, and Scott McNiven went in goal. And he was quite short. So I thought it was an interesting choice. But the rest of the team, played so well that Shrewsbury just never got near him. I don't remember him even having to take a ball, make a save or anything. Yeah.
That might explain Ian Atkins' philosophy then.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it worked. We should have got people to kick the goalie in the face more often then. Because I think we won, didn't we? So that is my back four.
If I can jump in, I also had Scott McNiven. The reason that I put Scott McNiven is for one tweet that he sent. So when Dominic Cummings went to Barnard Castle, the next day Boris Johnson was being grilled by journalists about why he isn't firing him because this is an absolute disgrace and people are dying and all this kind of stuff. And Twitter had gone mad. People going, this is absolutely disgraceful. This is the absolute pits. This is, you know, one rule for them, one rule. And then Scott McNiven tweeted and went, sounds like he's sticking up for a mate. And I thought, you know what? On one level, he's absolutely right.
Oh, can I change my...
So here's the rest of your defence.
So I struggled with my left backs and my right backs, so I couldn't be bothered to look it up. My other fullback is Matt Day. I always thought Matt Day was outperforming his ability and just enjoyed being a footballer and didn't know how he was getting away with it. And
As the rest of us thought as well.
There was a closed season where he came back, and I don't know why, but in my head he spent the entire summer eating donuts because he was like 3 stone overweight or something.
Yeah.
He was just in a hideous state, apparently. I don't even remember seeing him.
Oh, well, you couldn't miss him.
Yes. So my centre-backs. So I was going to go with Andy Crosby, but actually went with Arthur Nuhia.
Yeah.
He was symbolic of the realisation that we were in the conference for the long term. There was one game he came in, at the start of the season, we were playing Aldershot. Aldershot were flying at that time and they had a big away following. They brought flags and all sorts and it was brilliant atmosphere from them. And we held them for 15 minutes or something and we seemed to be competing with them and we thought, yeah, no, maybe we have got a chance this season. And then there was a ball came into the box and Nuhir jumped up and just punched the ball and conceded a penalty for no obvious reason. Turned the entire season on its head. And it was a sudden realisation that, no, we're going to be here for years. My other centre-back is Mark Crichton, which is at the other end of the spectrum. Just a great player, proper cult hero. His goal against York set the tone for the rest of that promotion season. And the photo of him scoring that goal is so fantastic on so many levels that he deserves a place just for that.
Go on then, Rich.
Yeah, again, I've kind of sat on the fence a little bit and written down a few names. When you said this is a player that surely we've all put down, I thought you were going to say Jake Wright, actually. I put Crosby, Crichton, and I also put, I mean, again, just for like soft spot sentimentality, I don't know, can I say Phil Gilchrist? Is that fair on him or myself?
It's your team. You can say what you like.
Can't remember if it was Phil Gilchrist's first game back in his kind of his final spell. But I remember it was an away game and it was somewhere really obscure like Barrow or somewhere like that. And he came on, and there was this kind of like real, kind of palpable sense of excitement. Is, you know, this kind of legend return, and you know, we're at this terrible level, and he's gonna absolutely transform. I mean, literally, the first thing he did was fall over. It's just literally the first thing. As you said, we're here for a long time.
Yeah. And then at fullback, soft spot for those legends. And I kind of, it breaks my heart every time I think about Paul Powell, but he did play for us in the noughties. And, you know, it's a bit, I went to see Billy Connolly a few years ago and it was awful, but we all gave him a standing ovation. As a sit up, like, as one, everyone said, this was for all the other stuff, not for tonight. And so for me, putting Paul Powell in this team is more about, obviously, some of his performances in the 90s were just out of this world. And I feel so sad that he didn't have what it took to reach a higher level.
He did have what it took, but he pissed it up the wall, really.
That's what I mean. He didn't have what it took beyond his talent.
I thought about putting Paul Powell in as well, but I'm still quite angry with him.
So I haven't done my defence then. So, I've got Andy Crosby in there. I've got Matty Robinson, left back. I always went in there. It's when they used to have the little bookies inside the stand, and I used to, every single time, go in there and put like £2 on Matt Robinson to score first and Oxford to win 3-0. And the odds were always 125-1. So I'd stand to win £250. And I put that on every single game. And I can't remember who it was against. One day we went in, put that bet on, Matt Robinson scored first, and we were 3-0 up, and there was like 2 minutes to go. And this is why he didn't make my goalkeeper choice. Andy Woodman came out for a routine cross, missed it, kicked a striker in the head. They got a penalty and scored and made it 3-1, and I didn't win my £250. So that's why Matty Robinson was in, because he nearly won me £250. I've actually gone, and this might be really unfashionable, I don't know, but I've gone Damien Batt for right back. I think he was brilliant. He was such a dynamic, forward-thinking defender. I just love watching him play. And then I'm surprised nobody else has gone for this. This is my final choice in defence was Matteo Corbo. I'm sure there'll be other opportunities to talk about the Ramon Diaz era, but Matteo Corbo, I just loved him. Mm. He just came on, instant yellow card within 3 minutes, straight away, getting, stamp his authority in the game by getting booked.
Yeah.
And then these ludicrous raking balls that were like 75 yards from kind of the left centre-back position, like looping all the way. And it was just like nothing we'd seen for a really long time at Oxford. Mm. And I just loved him for that.
Yeah, I'd sort of got him down as an honourable mention for the same reason. He was very, very entertaining.
Who came up? Crosby came up a few times.
Well, Crosby's going in, isn't he? Yeah.
Crosby and Crichton. I agree about Damien Batt. I think he did change that team, promotion team, quite considerably in terms of pure impact.
So we're going Batt, Crosby, Crichton, Robinson.
Midfield. There's absolutely no way that my midfield is going to get anywhere near this 11 because it's back to my symbolic of the decade.
Okay. So, Scott, start us off with your symbolically bad.
let's put these out of the way. Right, okay. So, again, my wingers, I can't remember the lefts and rights. So, I went with Courtney Pitt on the basis that I thought he was symbolic of the Ricks era. And the thing I remember about the Ricks era was his first game. Obviously, he was inheriting the Atkins team. He wanted them to kind of play from the back and play on the floor. And then you had Matt Bound and Andy Crosby passing it amongst themselves inside the six-yard box. And it was like everybody was just panicking. And Courtney Pitt played in that game and looked like he'd rather be anywhere else on earth. And I think it was just very symbolic of a time.
Because he had a song, didn't he, which was Courtney Pitt, 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 Courtney Pitt, Pitt, Pitt. But even our own fans at one point changed the word to something that rhymed with it.
You know, Oxford's got a history of loving wingers. It was so disappointing. You know, I don't think he realised just like the weight of the world was on him. And that's why we turned on him, I think, because he wasn't Beecham or Powell or Allen or any of those. You know, we were desperate for a player to be like that.
Did he play for Barcelona, or was Barcelona were looking at him at some point or something?
He certainly had a lot of promise around him, didn't he?
There was something, wasn't there? And I think, you know, then that was quite exotic, wasn't it?
Yes, I just Googled this. And so in May 21, Courtney Pitt did an interview in the Portsmouth News. As one of the country's most exciting young talents, the dazzling left winger was pursued by Barcelona and attracted bids from Monaco.
And so we were all quite excited, I think, when we heard that. But it really didn't live up to the expectations.
Yeah, he let himself down, he let the team down, but most of all, he let us down. My other winger was Lewis Haldane. Because there was a period where you could play for Oxford, you know, you kind of looked like Beckham or one of those kind of people. And Lewis Haldane was the ultimate version of that, with the diamond earrings, the multi-directional spiky hair, the orange skin. And he was pretty...
I was going to say, he used to leave a trail of fake tan behind him on the pitch.
What was it? There was something on... He got into a bit of a spat on Twitter a few years ago with some fans, didn't he?
Yeah, he went all Joey Barton, didn't he, about women commentators or one of those sorts of things.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, he's not having it. He's not having it.
Because I just remember posting a picture of a glazed gammon.
My two midfielders are Dave Savage, for the reason that I completely forgotten this, but when we were talking about unique songs from the stands, is that the East Stand used to sing to the theme tune of Steptoe and Son. Dave Savage, which clearly doesn't work at all.
But then for some reason it evolved into Daisy Savage. Have I made that?
Was that just you and your friends?
Was that just me?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of Lily Savage, different flower. But
so yeah, I had Dave Savage, and then I had Rob Woolyerston. Only because John Terry reckons he was the most skillful player he's ever seen in his life.
Yeah. There was an interview that I think the club sort of did over lockdown with Jamie Brooks and Chris Hackett. And they were also saying how talented he was. Now, I swear to this day, he's the only man I've ever seen go 90 minutes without touching the ball. Not once. So I'm not on the same page as them.
You're right. I knew somebody else would back that one up in terms of him being the greatest player ever to play, if only he could get hold of the ball.
It's just amazing, though, isn't it, that he was so talented yet never really succeeded at any club that he went to. That's quite impressive. God, I didn't realise how angry I was still was about these players in the 2000s.
I put Dave Savage because I genuinely thought he was a very good football player.
He was, actually. I don't know if that was just, you know, because everybody else around him was so bad.
Could be.
But actually, no, I don't think they were that bad at that point, were they? Oh, I wish I'd put him in my team.
There was a period where he was a proper box to box midfielder at one point, and we had a very fluid formation whereby he would drop back into defence. Then when we attacked, he would become more attacking. And he was like, I just remember him, just a period within one season where he was like extremely dynamic and extremely in an extremely well drilled team. But yeah, no, I thought he was a decent player.
Do you want to take us through the others then, Rich?
We had this conversation, didn't we, the other day about why Adam Chapman played at Wembley instead of Adam Murray due to injury. Because I did put Murray down pretty quickly because I think on his day he was, you know, a really decent player. On the wings, I went sentimental again, I'm afraid. As I said at the top, I still think Joey's the best left winger that we had that decade. And we've mentioned Jamie Brooks, and I just think in terms of his potential and again the sort of the heartbreak around his situation, it's worth mentioning, I think.
I was once playing Championship Manager, and I was obviously managing Oxford. Jamie Brooks was in my squad, and I suddenly got a thing came up on the screen saying that Jamie Brooks was going to be out for 3 months due to one of his bollocks falling off.
Okay, well, I mean, I went for a midfield three, kind of partly because at our best during that period when our side was, you know, kind of the most successful side, we were playing 4-3-3 broadly speaking for most of that. So I haven't gone with out-and-out wingers. Well, actually, that's not true. I've gone for one winger. But I've gone for a three. In the middle, I've gone Dean Whitehead. And I appreciate he kind of... Actually, we played him on the right quite a lot, didn't we? But it was clear that he was so much better than everybody else on the football pitch that he was playing with. And he was being massively hampered by what was a pretty poor football team. And also, you know, an Oxford player who's from Abingdon, who kind of goes on to captain a Premier League side for a really long time as well. I think he's one of those players that we never really got to see quite how talented he was. I think he's got to go down as probably one of the best players Oxford have ever had.
Mm.
And yet, for some reason, he never really quite gets the kudos that I think he deserves amongst Oxford supporters.
And actually, he was one of my other players that I thought should be nailed on. And also one of the only players that has gone on to have a career at a higher level for the rest of his career.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not really that many Oxford players that have gone on to do that.
So, I've also, you put him in defence, but I put him in midfield, but Paul Wantless.
I probably
played him both, but I definitely remember him in the middle of midfield, constantly just losing the control of the ball with his first touch and then having to lunge for the ball in his second touch. We used to call him Stretch Wantless for that reason. He was, I think he's brilliant. I was lucky enough to meet him quite a few times after he retired. And he's just like the least footballer person I've ever encountered in the world of football. Really, I'm just incredibly down to earth and normal bloke, and he's just brilliant. And I love the fact that he was a professional footballer. He shouldn't have been a professional footballer, but he was brilliant. I loved him. He was legendary. I think Paul Wantless. I loved him. My final midfielder, and you mentioned earlier about, does Andy Woodman want to be our assistant manager? He can't be our assistant manager because our assistant manager is Chris Hackett.
Oh, yes, of course.
And he goes,
Or is he?
but he goes down again as one of those really talented players that I don't think we ever really got a chance to see the best of, partly because when he first came through, Ian Atkins didn't like playing young players, so nobody young was getting into the side. Or wingers, for that matter, as well. And I think, he was like a really talented footballer. He went on a really good career after Oxford. And, he was clearly very talented. And there was something, Scott, you talk about things that typify that kind of decade. The first half of that decade, one of the big things that kind of struck me is how much wasted opportunity we had with talented players that never really made the most of. He's not in my squad, but Tommy Mooney's another one of those. Like, it was an absolute coup and a steal getting him from Swindon. It was a huge piece of business, and we had such a bad team. He never touched the ball because we never got the ball into the penalty area for him. So yes, that's one of the reasons why I've chosen those guys, because wasted talent.
So I've gone for Whitehead and Hackett as well. I've also gone for Jamie Cook. He is another one who started in the 90s. I think when he came back, he was still as good, if not a little bit better, because he had a little bit more experience.
And that goal against Luton.
I wasn't at that match, but it looked really good on YouTube.
Yeah, it was great. That was one of the most fun games I've had at the Kassam Stadium. Yeah. I loved that. It was brilliant.
For my final midfielder, this is more a personal, sentimental reason. I've gone for Barry Quinn, who isn't the best player. And when he was in midfield, definitely wasn't the best. He improved when they moved him to centre back, but he scored the winning goal against, what are they called, Droylsden, and subsequently my waters broke. And Chris Williams heard about this, and he phoned me a few days later when I was at home and everything, and he said to me, was it the shock of us winning that brought it on? And I said, no, it was the shock of Barry Quinn scoring. And he told Barry Quinn this, and he wrote about it in his programme notes the following match, and although he got mine and my daughter's name wrong. But apart from that, it was really lovely. So I've always got a bit of a soft spot for Barry Quinn for finally getting that damn thing out of there.
Your daughter, Barry.
Yes, my daughter, Barry. That's right. Yeah.
Are we going to have a midfield three, so we end up with a front three as well? Or
Whitehead and Hackett feel like go in to me.
I'm quite happy with Dave Savage going in there. I think that's a good shout.
Yeah. So we've got, so we're locking in for our midfield, a midfield trio of Savage, Whitehead and Hackett. Right, who wants to start on the front line then? We may as well get this out of the way, because if he's not on everybody's list, I'd be very surprised. But James Constable, he's not on your list.
Hang on a minute. I crossed him out, Barry Quinlan. Only because, again, you know, he was right at the end of the decade when, because of Barry Quinn's exploits, I wasn't, that sounds bad. That would have come out anyway or something. I wasn't really going much at that point. But yeah, obviously.
For me, we had a decade of mostly disaster, very few players sticking around and demonstrating any level of kind of commitment to a football club or whatever. To have somebody come out and not only be unbelievably committed to a single football club, which is such a rarity in this day and age, but also to be such a talismanic footballer in terms of the goals he scored and the way he went about his football on the pitch. Such a mild-mannered and nice bloke off the pitch, but an absolute monster on it. Mm. And I just, the guy's an absolute, genuine legend. And yeah, there are very few footballers, I think, that will ever make themselves as one with a football club, well, as one with Oxford United, as Beano did in that period. I think he was brilliant. I loved him.
100%. And I know Fraser on the fence end takes every opportunity to mention this as well, but the James Constable podcast is absolutely fantastic.
It's definitely a
must listen, I would say. Yeah.
I totally agree. I thought I'd grown out of the idea of having heroes in football, and then James Constable came along and he was just reliable in every sense. Even when he was on the bench and he kind of appeared to warm up, you kind of thought, thank God he's here. You know, we're recording this on deadline day, and I distinctly remember when Swindon transfer thing was happening, and I remember a tweet, just watching Twitter sort of ticking away, and a tweet, and I can't remember who sent it now, but just somebody kind of went, Beano, no, when he thought it was going to Swindon. And it was just that level of panic that he was about to go. And the fact that he didn't, and as you say, Andy, I mean, I think that just cemented everything, didn't it, really? I mean, it's just the perfect story. Yeah, no, I mean, Constable's a shoo-in. I mean, he wasn't one of mine, but I haven't got him on the list, but he was a shoo-in for me.
So I've got two others. One is Matt Green. Kind of not the same reason, but the back end of that the period in the conference, he was suddenly a goal scorer that I felt like I could rely on, and we had suddenly like an abundance of ability up front, and it was really nice being in a situation where whoever it fell to, you felt like they were going to score a goal. But if nothing else, the moment at Wembley when he just turned the ball onto his left peg and launched it into the top corner for the opening goal, again, it's moments that cement people in Oxford folklore, and I love him for that. I think he's great. He'd probably not be in many other people's pick, but I really, really liked him. And finally, my is a player who was patchy. But when he was at his best, he was absolutely incredible, and that was Yemi. I just remember him playing for Eastbourne and absolutely destroying us in the FA Cup, and we're going like, who on earth is this? This guy is amazing. And then he signed for us and then was subsequently a bit rubbish. But then he got up to speed and he was really good. He had that thing where he was, just as his contract was coming to an end, he would suddenly play really, really, really well again. He was just electric. He scored some really fun goals. He maybe didn't quite have the end product that you wanted him to have, given the kind of the pace that he had on the ball. But he was just one of those players who kind of, for quite a long period of time, we had him, and he just kind of, at his best, he really lit up the football pitch. Anyway, yeah. But no, Yemi, I loved him. He was great.
I had Yemi on my list for all the same reasons. The lasting memory, or one of the big memories, which was that just a real moment of proper fun, was towards the end of the 2006-2007 season. Things had started to derail a little bit. Well, quite a lot, actually, because we'd been top. And we played Dagenham at the Kassam. And there was a right foul-up. Dagenham keeper scooped the ball into the air. Yemi jumped onto it. He was about 45 yards out or something and just instinctively looped the ball towards the goal. And just watching it drop in, you know, it felt like it took about 10 minutes to get there. But it, just watching it drop in was just the best, you know, it was just the best moment. It was just a great Yemi moment, I think.
You mentioned Tommy Mooney earlier as somebody who was too good for the rest of the team, would have been brilliant if he was surrounded by better players. I think a player who fits into that category is Derek Lilly. But I think he was genuinely too good for that team at the time. There was something in him that I thought was, in those two seasons, that was just head and shoulders. And I think he was regularly frustrated by those around him. Very early decade one, but someone I always remembered as standing out from that pretty terrible period in our history. But
well, I've gone for Jamie Brooks, the other nailed on person that everybody's obviously put in.
I mean, I thing is, I missed pretty much all of Jamie Brooks.
Okay.
I saw the very start of that season, and then I went off travelling and stuff because I was just off the back end of university, yeah. And I just when I got back, it was just after he had been struck down ill, yeah, so I never really got a chance to see
him. He was embarrassingly miles ahead of everybody else in that team, you know, and he was 17, 18. He was just phenomenal, and it's one of the saddest stories in football history, not just in our club, because he could have gone on to be fantastic, and it's such a shame that only we got to see him, really.
He was on the verge of Arsenal, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. I don't know if he'd got. He was about to go for a trial with them, I think, yeah. Wasn't he? Or
it said he's like 48 hours from signing, sure, or 72 hours from signing.
Yeah.
Now, he was in my team. I didn't know quite where to put him. And again, as I said earlier, just the heartbreak of what could have been.
My other striker, I don't think is going to be hugely popular, but I've gone for Lee Steele because he produced, I think, the best individual performance I've ever seen from an Oxford player. And I'm going back to that Shrewsbury match where Scott McNiven went in goal. And as I say, it was just he and Jefferson Louis were up front that day, and they just, in that second half, they absolutely battered Shrewsbury. So they just didn't even get the chance to get close to our goal. And he was absolutely phenomenal that day. And I've never seen a performance like that from an Oxford player. He was absolutely fantastic. So I know that he did dreadful things to us later on, which I don't really think was all down to him, if I'm honest.
No.
Because I think John Ashton had quite a hand in it as well. But yeah, it's I thought he was phenomenal. He was a really good player. Again, he was injured a lot, wasn't he? But when he played, brilliant player.
There is absolutely no doubt that when he played for us, Lee Steele was a really, really good striker. I mean, he was genuinely brilliant. I mean, yeah, again, his story's been edited somewhat.
But he was
excellent.
I got no ill feeling towards him. I agree totally that he's instinctively one of the best goal scorers we had around that in that decade. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody got any honourable mentions for anybody? I was just going to mention, because it was a really strange, sort of a cult hero, but Jude Sterling.
Yes.
Just became this massive hero, and I could never really quite understand, because he wasn't very good, was he?
No.
But the fans loved him. Everybody loved him. Was it just because we could all go, Jude?
I think it was partly that, but it was also partly because he was the first player that we had ever had who, certainly for a very long time, who had a long throw. And it was like this. It was like this kind of this enormous novelty that we had a guy. So then, therefore, you know, it was the same as we were doing with Kieran Brown recently, in relying on this long throw, even though it had never ever got as close to ever getting anywhere near to scoring a goal.
No.
I've just Googled Jude Sterling and he's got the same birthday as me, funny enough, so he's my new favourite player.
Aww.
Yeah, there we go. Me, Jude and Stedman Pearson out of 5-star. There we go. One for the kids.
Yeah, because we had three midfielders, didn't
definitely
we?
Yeah. Beano. And I'd go with Brooks personally.
I think so, yeah.
Sheer talent, yeah.
I'm happy with that.
We haven't mentioned Steve Basham either.
I've got him written down and
Yeah, I've crossed him out. I saw him this morning.
I feel kind of bad because he's sort of... He had a chant which is the worst earworm ever for player chants.
You keep saying that as well.
You can't have a Christmas song all year. Bad. You can't have a Christmas year song all year round for a chant. You can't. It's awful. But I liked Steve Basham. Like what I loved is he was kind of like an iconic striker when that managed to scrape about 8 or 9 goals a season.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that was partly to do with the absolutely dreadful team he was playing in. But
partly.
Yeah. No, I like Basham.
He seemed like a nice bloke, and I think, you know, he's the player I think of when I think about that Leighton Orient match, because he just looked. It genuinely mattered to him, didn't it?
Yeah.
He was absolutely devastated.
There's one more place. I reckon Yemi, myself.
We're going to lock that in. I'm going to go through the team then and see if we're all happy with this side then. So in goal, we've got Andy Woodman. Then we've got a back four of Damian Batt, Andy Crosby, Mark Crichton and Matty Robinson. Then a midfield of Dave Savage, Dean Whitehead and Chris Hackett. And up front, we've got Beano, Jamie Brooks and Yemi Odebade.
It's all right, then.
It's not a terrible squad, is it?
I wouldn't mind that.
That says 14th in League 2.
Yep.